Moving on to our next presentation, I also forgot to mention at the beginning that we have two doctors presenting today. There are different types of doctors. Jason is a PhD, but we also have from Canada, from the province of Quebec, Dr. Pierre Gosselin. He's an MD and an MPH, and he currently works at the Quebec Public Health Institute, where he coordinates a joint research program between the Institute and a national nonprofit organization that focuses on climate change and health. He also works on the health component of the Quebec Action Plan on Climate Change, and he also is affiliated with a university and the Institute, the National Institute for Scientific Research, both in Quebec City. He was trained in family medicine and environmental health. We look forward to your presentation, Pierre.
Well, thank you very much, and many thanks for this invitation. Do you hear me well?
Yes, we can.
Okay, very good. This is about urban cool islands, so the kind of stuff we want to do, as Jason just mentioned, for which there's much evidence at this time. This is a story about what we did over the last 6-7 years here in this province, mostly around the Montreal area. And just to give you a glimpse on how public health authorities can become leaders in urban planning, even though it's not really our normal job to do so. But when nobody else is willing to take the leadership, it can be interesting to do so, to go ahead and do things, really. The context was quite favorable at that time in the sense that we had a government-wide program on an action plan on climate change. There was funding from a carbon tax, which is possible to do here in Canada in some provinces. And after that, we got some funding specifically for health adaptation, about $5 million a year. And fighting urban heat island was one of our top priority. That's classified under prevention in our mind because we, of course, did emergency preparedness for heat waves, of course, but all other extremes that are related to climate change. And we also had a research program. The total budget of what I'm going to talk to you about for fighting and learning about how to reduce the impact of urban heat island was $17 million over 5 years. And actually, we got more than that invested in the in terms of matching from our partners. What we did is begin with developing the scientific basis, develop some tools. We didn't know what worked exactly in our context of a northern country with strong changes in temperature in winter and summer and lots of rain also. We wanted to evaluate on several aspects what we did, and I'll just conclude by what lessons have we learned and what we are currently doing after this first part of the business. Scientific basis was already addressed by Jason and Victoria. Basically, we wanted to focus on the people most at risk. We thus prioritize, from our point of view, the most deprived areas. We've got a deprivation index that we use throughout Canada that was developed here in this institute. These areas usually combine high exposure to heat because of the poor quality of the dwellings, more work constraints. You have to be there at your work at a given time. There are often very few pools compared to other neighborhoods in the same city, few parks, no cottage to go to in the weekend, usually window air conditioning, not everyone, instead of the central or wall air conditioning, which is more effective. And of course, we have statistics, as we have a public health system, statistics on each and every part, each and every census tract in terms of level of chronic diseases, hospitalization. So we know where the high levels happen in a given city. And from our mapping, 100% of those deprived areas live in urban heat islands or within 100 feet of them. So what we did basically is prepare our staff, what works, what doesn't in those mitigation strategies that was published early on. We also did a life cycle assessment because not much exists about that. We did a preliminary one, a screening. Why we discovered that in terms of negative, we didn't want to promote things that would have high levels of environmental impacts or that would increase the production of greenhouse gases. And this assessment led us to discover that the least impact is better management of rainwater in the city, leave the rain in the soil instead of sending it to the wastewater system. After that, if you can avoid extensive landscaping, of course you avoid the trucks and the backhoes and all that stuff that produce greenhouse gases. So plant trees or vines is much more preferable, and that green roofs have more negative impacts because you need to bring lots of soil. You need to sometimes reinforce the roofs. You need to import. In our case, we do have some plants that we can use here, but we import some from Ontario, from Oregon, or elsewhere. So all this contributes to negative impacts compared to a high albedo membrane that you can put a white roof, basically. So that's the kind of interesting stuff that one needs to know. We also did a mapping, a surface mapping of the urban heat island for the whole province. Here you see the island of Montreal in this region, in this map. You've got about 4 million people living there. And you can see where it's more intense. And very often, it's where some of those red areas where we have less, more deprived people. So we, all this was on the web, usable by potential partners. We also developed a vulnerability tool that was simply overlapping. You can overlap the areas with high deprivation level and urban heat island and let's say more old people compared to the rest of the province. And it allowed us to focus on very deprived areas for all our projects. That was a requirement. And it's been used since for many other purposes by project promoters and municipalities. It's the second most popular download on the Open Government website. So that's the kind of overlay you can see when you use that tool. And you can pinpoint what is it below the urban heat island that causes it, and what is it when it's not a urban heat island, and here you see a park. What we did after that was an open call for proposals with specific criteria. We had over 100 proposals, and we had a call for small projects and a call for larger projects. In the end, we funded 44 projects. We required matching funds for smaller projects, in-kind matching. And basically, in the end, we got the 2-for-1 matching. We got projects from NGOs, from municipalities, from public housing authorities, and also from consortiums, formed of several of those same categories. The project was evaluated the proposals, sorry, were evaluated, and once funded, followed by various specialists that we hired here at the Public Health Institute. So engineers, people in landscaping, architecture, we had good people that help us from the private sector and universities. We wanted to have good projects. And the call was really very popular. It's been very good for our reputation as a public health institute. Basically, we did several types of projects, including parkings. Urban agriculture was eligible as a kind of project that we would promote. We did some, as you can see, but they were extensive, no trees, no stuff that would create too much negative environmental impacts. Some of them were for growing stuff at the convention center, for instance, that you see in downtown Montreal, right in the middle. White roofs were pretty popular too. And we had back streets and other places where people can play and stay in the shade whenever possible. Especially, we did an effort in public housing settings. We have several of them in those neighborhoods. And we wanted to transform those planned parkings where nothing happens but drug dealing into a place where people could live and feel good. And that's what you can see one here, where we maintain some water in the parking and plants and reduce. Just ripping off asphalt is a good thing for fighting urban heat island. Here you see the transformation of a bland parking into a place where people can actually grow vegetables and have fun. And we did, during all that, a standard for parkings, for transforming parkings that has been also very popular and that can be used by, it's now recommended by our Ministry of Transport and by adopted by several municipalities also as the basis for their normal investments in parking renovation. Those projects were in schoolyards, were in public squares and parkings. They were also in kindergartens. And in one borough of Montreal, we unplugged all the rain gutters and put them into the soil so that more water was staying put in the soil and could contribute to evaporation and evapotranspiration after that. Those projects needed to have a communication plan, a maintenance plan for the next years, and all of them used participatory methods to design the projects collectively. So there were most of the time three meetings, kitchen meetings and little assemblies where people would choose between different options so that they could eventually appropriate the project for their specific housing situation. The final evaluations we got, some of them were done through surveys for quality of life. And the basic, the bottom line is that most people found that their quality of life much improved. Some of them told us that these were life-changing projects. So we were very pleased. There were comments about more shade, that the places were nicer, quieter, that the social activities brought by urban agriculture or the fact that you've got benches and small parks were interesting for exchanges between people, would bring more physical activity. And in the end, it was cooler too, which is nice to know, but not everywhere. This is important. We used several methods, numerical modeling, surface modeling. We used comparison of normalized satellite imaging and also micrometeorology done by Environment Canada, one of our partners. And here you can see one of the projects where we have good improvement, that's a public housing project. What we see is that by working simultaneously on roofs, you see plenty of white roofs on the right, planting more trees, keeping more water there, you see the improvements varying between a reduction from 10% to 50%, depending on the exact place where the action has been implemented. In some instances, it's close to zero, and in a few schoolyards where they had to change, they did lessen the changes in the choice of materials without letting us know, it even got worse. But most of the projects did improve significantly the level of coolness of the given parking or area. One of the most interesting side effects is that we contributed to creating a movement in the Montreal area where municipalities, towns, and cities are offering grants, small grants, to promote white roofs. It's now even compulsory in some boroughs of Montreal. They offer more trees. Now they have some interesting objectives for the, I believe it's something like the 375 year, fifth year of the foundation of Montreal, and they want to plant a huge number of trees. So it's becoming more and more important, and more projects in the urban agriculture have seen light too. Here we have a section of Montreal where it's been compulsory for the last 4 or 5 years to use white roofs, and you see it's going fast. It's just a normal cycle of roof replacement for flat roofs, and it's going really rapidly. What we learned from all this as a public health institution is that managing infrastructure projects, we had 44, you remember, so we had all types of problems like contaminated soil and problems with property of the land and various problems, availability of expertise, that kind of stuff is really tough to manage. So we decided we would simplify our life in the future life. One very rewarding aspect of that, of using participatory methods, is that it's really crucial to bring good ideas, to bring people to be part of the solution. The size of the projects also matter for impact. You need good size project. That's a lesson we've learned. And of course, it can be immensely popular with politicians and managers and people living there. So what we decided, of course, we did a lot of dissemination of all those good news through various social media and website and conferences. And we decided for the next part of the climate change action plan, which has begun last year, that we would have only two programs in Montreal and one in Quebec City, and that we have only one customer in each city, which is a coalition of NGOs working with municipalities, the private sector, hospitals, various specialists, and the public. We went for large size projects, more ambitious ones. We now have included criteria in terms of biodiversity, promoting physical exercise, more urban agriculture, besides the heat avoidance and the air pollution stuff that was there in the first project. Altogether, we did that because we realized that we needed specialists in trees, so that we plant now the trees that will be resistant to the climate in Turkey 40 years from now. We realized that we would bring to the exercise health promotion people besides environmental health people. We realized that bringing more people with diverse interests, the people that are interested in flowers and trees and the bees and everything, like the song goes, they can contribute to this fighting urban heat islands. So, also added the connectivity, the concept of connecting various existing parks so that they constitute in the end linear parks, which promote exercise, which promote exchanges, not to mention maintain biodiversities. We also continue with the participatory methods, but now we go online with a platform for commitments. I want to plant a tree in my backyard, my front yard. I want to give money. I want to give a hand to those planting trees. And we continue to evaluate all this. And as a conclusion, I show you again the map. This is the island of Montreal, which I showed first. And our project at this stage will be in the blue circle, which is connected between on the right the St. Lawrence River and another river on the top. And what you see is the existing remaining levels of biodiversity corridors on the island that we want to put a little more active, that we want to densify, and that where our project will take place with partners from all over the economic and public and NGO sector. We do that there because it's a poorer area. If you go to the west of the island, it's more connected, more remaining biodiversity, because it's these are where the plush neighborhoods are. Basically, what we will do is take the existing parks and try to connect them so that people and of course, the animals and the insects can connect between the different parts where biodiversity still exists. That's about it, and thank you.
Thank you, Pierre. I really commend you on the work that you're doing. Your program is really great in that it's comprehensive and well thought out, and I think it's going to be helpful for states and local governments here in the U.S. So, like I told Jason, keep up the good work. So we're going to do one last poll question before we go into the Q&A. And one last reminder, please type in your questions into the chat box. You can do that even during the Q&A. We'll try to get to as many as we can. If not, we will post them. We will answer them later and post them on the website along with the proceedings. So, Wendy, over to you.
Great. So the last poll question is, which implementation step best characterizes your community's current efforts to reduce the heat island effect? And for this question, we ask you to select just one of the answers. So are you understanding the scientific basis and available tools? Are you implementing pilot projects? Are you implementing full-scale projects? Are you evaluating projects and identifying lessons learned? Or have you not yet started? So as with the previous poll questions, I'll give everyone just a few seconds to select your responses. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close and share the results. And it looks like 40% are at the step of understanding the scientific basis and available tools. 22% haven't started yet. 18% are implementing pilot projects. 11% are evaluating their projects and lessons learned. And 10% are implementing full-scale projects. So thanks again for participating in this poll question. And again, as Victoria mentioned, please continue to send in your questions for speakers. We've got a fair amount of time for the Q&A session, so we look forward to getting your questions answered.
Thanks, Wendy. And again, your answers to the poll are really great for us to learn. And I would add that please let us know what you're doing. As I mentioned, we have a database of some programs in the U.S. As far as what's going on the ground for Heat Island work, but we know that there is a lot more going on. So please take the time to send me an email and let me know. It will be very useful to us.